Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 244, I was very lucky to have Brad Ritter on the podcast. He's an account executive, author, and unbeatable mind coach. We talked about many things. We talked about his book, School of Grit, Doing the Hard Things, and we talked a lot about Silfit. And yes, how can I say, the sort of torturous things he had to go through. He basically did a Navy SEAL hell week over 50 hours. I've got to say, yeah, his story about it all was quite fascinating. So, yeah, if you can sit back, relax, enjoy the podcast, we'll be happy to entertain you. Happy to entertain you? That's a new one. Anyway, sit back and enjoy. Yeah. Peace. Have a good one, my friends. Enjoy. Yeah. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 244, I am very lucky, honored to have Brad Ritter on the podcast. He is account executive, author, and yeah, unbeatable mind coach, to say the least. And I'll say a little bit of a sadist as well, but that's not me. That might be others. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great, sir. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Looking forward to this.
You, sir, are a very interesting cat, a very interesting individual. Now, yes. Now, let's just say, like, there are a couple of people that come to mind, but like, yes, you definitely have a sort of slight David Goggins-esque feel about you on a sort of a regular basis. Basically putting yourselves into that realm of discomfort to truly find out who you are. So what started this quest?
Yeah, great question. And to even be mentioned in the same breath as David Goggins is an honor, because I do follow him on social media and I read his book, Can't Hurt Me, and it was It was a game changer for me a few years ago. So, you know, what really started me on my quest was just taking an analysis of my life. So I'm 42 right now, but back in 2005, I was about 35, and I guess you could call it a midlife crisis, if you will. But I had some questions that were just popping up in my mind that I had a hard time answering. Questions like, you know, what's my purpose? What am I really here to do? And by all accounts, I have no room to complain. I mean, I'm super successful career, loving family. My childhood was fantastic, man. I had a great childhood growing up. Oldest of four. My parents are still married. Never had to fight for, you know, a roof over my head or food. And my analysis of my life was that, you know what? I think I've had it a little too easy. Things have come, not that they were delivered to me on a silver platter, but life, when I compared my life to a lot of people you may have had on your podcast or motivational speakers, people you see on YouTube, it's like, man, I haven't been through that adversity. Mm-hmm. I haven't had that gut check to really find out like who I am and what I'm made of. And that's what really got me started on my own personal development journey.
Would you, like, that is interesting because, like, okay, yes. Now, like all superhero films or like comic book stories, there has to be some type of tragic backstory, what comes with it. It's same thing with motivational speakers or like basically people who are out there inspiring. My life was good. I had a great upbringing. Four brothers, family, mother, father together. Yeah. And you know what? Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. There wasn't that tragic event or events from my life. And I'm not saying that my life was completely, you know, easy and nothing bad ever happened. I mean, I went through similar struggles like we all do, but I found someone super cool. I love YouTube. It's how I learned to do lots of different things. I'll hop on YouTube to, you know, fix something around my house or learn how to smoke a brisket or whatever, right? You go to YouTube for it. And I actually went to YouTube to help answer that question, right? What's my purpose? Where am I going? And there was millions of hits, but this one in particular caught my eye, and it was a TED Talk. You ever seen a TED Talk before?
I have one or two in my lifetime.
You ever seen one that changed your life?
Like, this is the thing. I would say I've watched TED Talks, which have opened my perspective to like new lines of thinking, but I haven't had like that sort of epiphanal sort of TED Talk, you know?
That was it for me. I had the one that was like, oh, not only did it inspire me, but I took action on it. Mm. And it was a lady by the name of Angela Duckworth. And Angela Duckworth wrote a book called Grit. I'm not too sure if you're familiar with the book.
No, I'm not. Like, it's one of the things, I've got a book list I need to work on.
Everybody's got that book list, right? And everybody's telling you, oh, you got to put this one up there. So yeah. I would definitely add it to there. But it was a game changer. And her TED Talk was 6 minutes. And she talked about how her study in psychology, she studied grit. And in her research, she interviewed and researched West Point graduates. She interviewed some of the top salespeople in very demanding industries like medical sales, first responders, you know, inner city teachers, people that like have really tough jobs. Like, what's going to keep them around? What's going to make them persevere? Will that teacher be around next year? And it came down to one thing, and it was grit. And she found out that grit's the, in her opinion, it's the number one indicator and predictor of success in life. And I said, ooh, that's cool. I wonder how gritty I am. You know, I thought I was, you know, pretty tough, right? I'm mentally tough. I'm emotionally resilient. Sure, I gotta be gritty. She gives this scale. You can go to her website still today. It's 10 questions. It's called the grit scale. And I took it, and the results were not flattering. I think out of how I score, I scored better than 20% of everybody that had taken it up to that point. And that just didn't sit well with me. It just opened up my eyes to, hey, maybe I'm living a lie. Maybe I'm not shooting high enough. Maybe I'm too comfortable, you know? Maybe I'm caught. So I started doing some more research on it, read her book, and she says you can grow grit from the inside out and you can grow it from the outside in. One of the ways you can grow it from the outside in is to go through some sort of adverse experience, like a life crucible. Hopefully it's one that you invite and that you don't have it thrown into your face, because that is one thing about life, right? We're all going to get hit with adversity.
Yes.
We know it's coming. But what if you could actually prepare for that adversity? I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but what if you could make it easier to get through it? That's what I was in search of. So I went back to YouTube because I was on to something now. And I wasn't letting it go, because it was kind of like, you know, listening to, you were mentioning listening to TED Talks or maybe even reading a book, you get a lot of good ideas, but do you actually implement those ideas? Do you take it that next step further? That's hard to do. I mean, it really is. And I felt like that's really what started me on my path. And my next place that I went was a camp. So I went to YouTube and I typed in world's toughest training. And this camp pops up, and it's run by Navy SEALs. And I'm like, well, who are the Navy SEALs? You know, I mean, I'd heard of them, but I didn't know what all they did. And this camp is modeled off of something called Hell Week. And civilians can sign up for it. It was originally started for people who wanted to go into special forces to kind of, you know, see if they could make it, help prepare them. And so Hell Week for Navy SEALs and for your listeners, it's a week long with zero sleep. It's just a complete, they completely break you down, build you up. You know, I mean, think about that, a week long with no sleep and just constant mental, physical, emotional, let's just say harassment. They call them evolutions. I thought, well, maybe that's what I said. Maybe I need a dose of that, you know, not that that was the real thing. And I didn't want to be a SEAL, but I had never tested myself to those limits, you know, really push yourself to those limits to really figure out who you are deep down inside, what your character is. So I knew I was onto something, and I remember to this day, the guy that came up with this camp, by the way, his name's Mark Devine. He's a former Navy SEAL commander, and the program's called SEAL Fit, and the camp's called Kokoro Camp, right? It's 50 hours straight of nonstop, you know, mental, physical, and emotional evolutions, we'll say. And I'll never forget this, man, because this is what got me to sign up. And when I say this, I still get chills. But he was addressing a class. So he's got a Kokoro class they're formed up, right? All these strangers have shown up. They know they're getting ready to get their butts kicked, and you're waiting. And Commander Divine walks out. He addresses the class, and he says, "Rejoice in adversity. Rejoice in adversity. How do we grow as human beings? It's through adversity. Warriors seek out the severest of schools in order to test their character. Welcome to the severest of schools." And man, I was just like, ah, I got to do this. You know, I had goosebumps. The hair was going up on the back of my neck, and that was it, man. That's what started me down my path.
Yeah, because like this is the thing. Now, don't get me wrong. Like the path you chose to go down, let's just say it's not a path for the weak-hearted. Because I was watching about 10, 20 minutes of like the video they've got on there where they had, this poor guy who did not come prepared. You just, like, in the sort of beginning intro bit, was like, yeah, should we vote to keep him in or, like, send him home? And because, like, this guy was carrying maybe, 25 pounds too much weight for like the whole sort of training which you need to do. It's one of those things where you can never actually say what it's going to be like. As much as like if you go, oh, I'm a CrossFitter, oh yeah, I go to the gym every day, ah, this, that, the other, you might as well go blah 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 blah. It doesn't connect, because when you're cold, when you're wet, when you're tired, especially when you're tired, trying to like muster up that energy, that sort of fortitude to sort of carry on. And like, I only say that as a person who sits as an observer from the outside. Like, when you got there, like, what was the sort of first sort of emotion when you were in it properly? What rose up? Because it's different when you like go, oh, goosebumps at home. But when you're there, when you're in the thick of it all.
Yeah, great, great question. And, you know, Goggins talks about that a little bit on his podcast and stuff, meaning that, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he says, you know, you might see something on TV, you're on the couch, it's nice and warm in your house, and you see someone, you know, climbing Everest, and you're like, yeah, that looks cool, I could do that, but you don't realize how freaking cold they are. They can't breathe because they're so high up, and, you know, you actually do something crazy like that, and you're in it, it's like, oh my gosh, this is way worse than I could have ever guessed, you know, and the reason you're probably making those decisions is you're comfortable, right? You're in your house, you're on your couch, whatever. So that's what went through my head there when you were talking about that. And I can tell you right now, it didn't take long. As soon as I showed up to even report, you know, those fears started coming into the back. Have I trained hard enough? Am I ready for this? What if I get hurt? You know, what if I got to use the bathroom? Where could I go use the bathroom? You know, just basic stuff, you know. Do they even let you do that? How much food will I get? So many unknowns, right? So many unknowns. And it wasn't until right before I went into the complex. This is a funny story, actually, so bear with me. So in order to go to this camp, there's prerequisites. They don't just let anybody in. Just because you have the money or the time to do it doesn't mean you're going to do it. You have to be able to – you have to meet a standard. So you have to be able to do so many, you know, push-ups, so many pull-ups, so many sit-ups, run a mile in a certain time, all that stuff, right? And you know that going in. And keep in mind, those are just standards. You should be shooting for optimum, like way above the standards.
Yeah.
Because when you get – because when they actually make you do that and test it, you've already been smoked for 3 hours straight, you know? They don't tell you that. But just to give your listeners an idea of what you're getting ready to go in, you don't get to do that fresh. They're going to do that after you've been doing hours and hours of calisthenics, getting hosed down and all that good stuff. But before any of that even started, you had to write a why essay, meaning like what is your reason for signing up for the camp? Because – and you probably hear this lots of different places. You got to have a strong why. You know, like Simon Sinek, great book. Why?
Absolutely.
You got to start with it. And a lot of times you just ask yourself why a few times to get to the real root of the question or the potential problem. So my why going into it was I wasn't happy with how I was operating as a parent and as a husband. So I've been married for almost 17 years, and I have two wonderful kids. Love them. They were my why, because I wanted to show them that they could do more than they think they can. That we all have these self-imposed ceilings and limits that we put on ourselves, and you can shatter through those. You just got to believe in yourself and keep them going. So those they were the reason I made it through that entire camp. But part of that essay. Facebook can get you into trouble, right?
Oh,
we all know how social media can get you into trouble. Okay. And I've never been one of those big people to take a bunch of selfies and post a lot. That just wasn't me back then at all. So I made the mistake of the day before I took a picture of myself on the beach. Cause this is in, or close to Coronado, California, like Southern California. I took a picture of myself on the beach and just said something simple like, "Hey, last time I'm checking in before my weekend beatdown, you know, dot, dot, dot." And someone saw that. And it was a lady I used to work with, in fact. She was at the time like VP of Human Resources or something like that. And she said, "Yeah. Oh, Brad, are you in town for X, Y, and Z? I know someone else who's in town for that." So come to find out, that person that saw her post was one of the coaches there. One of the coaches. So I'm forming up. I'm on the outside of this building, forming up in line. They're asking us to go in two by two, and there's about 45 of us. And we're standing at attention, looking out at a street, and you know that feeling when someone's walking right behind you. You know someone's behind you. I could even see a shadow. And he puts this piece of paper in front of me, and it's a printout of the Facebook post. And he said, "Do you know who I am?" And I said, "No, sir. I don't know who you are." And he said, "Well, do you think it's a good thing that I know who you are from Facebook and that you're here for this class?" I said, "No, sir." And he's like, "Extra sauce for you this weekend. Extra sauce." And I'm thinking, oh, shit. Extra sauce. I'm like, this thing hasn't even started. I'm already messing up. I'm a marked man already. Already they're going to know who I am. Yeah, so that's That was my first like oh shit moment. So come to find out, it's a small world, and social media can help make that small. The lady that saw that, and then the coach that was there, they went to prom together. You believe that?
I hope for your sake you treated that lady like a queen.
Absolutely. Yeah, Cindy. Her first name's Cindy. If you're listening, yeah, she's awesome. So I love Cindy.
Oh my God, that is mental. So before, like, I have to ask, how many hours, like, or how many? No, not hours. How long did it take you to sort of just train to get the prerequisites just down? Because people need to know this. I got to know myself.
Yeah, so I'd always been into fitness, but up until that point, I would say it was more rudimentary. Like, I was the typical, you know, go to the big Globo gym, run on the treadmill for 30 minutes, and then, like, you know, let's go do some curls for the girls. And, you know, it was all about having that beach bod and looking good, right?
Yeah. I like the way you use Globo Gym, dodgeball. Thank you.
Dodgeball, yes. Great, great movie, by the way. Great movie. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. So I have some friends who are in the military, and I was never in the military, civilian, but I have some friends who still are and serve, and they knew I was thinking about doing this camp. Like, "Well, why don't you come train with us?" I'm like, "Cool, I'll come train." Like, I'm like, "Cool, I want to see what you guys do." And you had referenced CrossFit earlier. Well, I had never done CrossFit. So I go into this place, and they're doing this wacky shit on bars. Come to find out, it's called muscle ups, but I'd never seen a muscle up before.
Oh, no.
And, you know, deadlift, they're doing like thrusters, and I mean, you name it, just different stuff. And I said, "Whoa, I don't train this way at all." And I I said, do you mind if I can work out with you? And they're like, well, you can try to hang with us, was the response. And they broke me. Like, I mean, one workout, I couldn't hang. I think I threw up a couple times. I went home dejected because I said, oh, I am weak. You know, here I thought, like, hey, I'm looking pretty good. I'm strong. My ego was up here, and I got a dose of humble pie delivered from my buddies. But you know what? I'm glad that happened. Absolutely glad that happened, because we all need those moments in our life that humble us. And there's a couple ways you can go when something like that happens. You just tuck tail and, you know, quit and say, okay, well, cool, I'm not going to show back up because, you know, I just got my ass beat. Or do you come back up, or do you keep coming back to get stronger? I kept coming back to get stronger. And then I got to the point where it took me about 6 months of training, probably 2.5 hours a day, I'd say. Some sessions I would go the full 2.5, and that's from stretch to, you know, getting all the workouts done. Mm-hmm. Other days I would split that up, maybe do an hour in the morning, hour and a half in the evening, or vice versa. But I got to the point where I started being able to put it on them. So I caught up, you know? Yeah.
I often find people, like, when it comes to fitness, when, like, basically they always fall into these two camps predominantly. It's either, yes, they fall into the strength camp and they're not fit, yep, or they fall into the fit camp and they're not strong.
Not strong.
It's very rare you get the combination of the two together. And, like, they go, CrossFit is the way forward. Yeah, for some people it is. It's, but you get that combination more times than not in with that type of fitness regime, if you get what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean, because you have to be both to make it through this camp. Mm. And a lot of it, I mean, let's face it, that camp was designed basically to get someone through Special Forces training. And inside of Special Forces training, you have to be strong and you have to have endurance. And they said specifically on the website, a CrossFit program on its own will not prepare you for this. You'll get strong.
Yeah.
But a lot of those, and I love CrossFit, but a lot of those workouts, WODs, are, you know, 15, 20 minutes. Dude, you're going to be going for 50 hours. So you better be throwing some endurance in there. So, you know, if you do a CrossFit program and then you mix in some, let's say, long distance running or rucking or something like that, now you're on to something, right? Because you're training strength and endurance. So that's primarily what I did for 6 months, and just added, I really just looked for ways to make things suck extra, because I knew what I was going into. So, like, for instance, if it was cold outside, I'd take a t-shirt and I'd put underneath a faucet, put on a wet t-shirt, and go run outside already on a cold day. Like, just kind of one-upping it, because I knew I'm going to be cold there, so I got to get used to the cold. And I hate being cold. Absolutely hate it. Yeah. I would run with sand in my shoes, because we're going to be on the beach and I'm going to be around sand and it's not going to feel good. So I'd purposely put sand in my shoes, like, you know, just things like that, just to one up it.
Interesting. Very interesting. Wait, when you say you put sand in your shoes, like, did you have a conventional running shoe, or did you have to have military boots? Because that's one of the things I think would throw some people, quite a lot of people, because it's easy to run in nice trainers, you know?
Yeah. So you actually had to bring both. So the majority of the time you were in boots, but we were allowed to change into regular athletic tennis shoes, I think twice during the 50 hours. And you actually got to bring extra pairs of pants and shirts. So I think I went through 3 pairs of pants and 5 t-shirts over that course. Because you're just and they know what they're doing. As soon as you put on a clean shirt and pants, they're just going to hose you down, or they'll make you be a sugar cookie, which I don't know if you're familiar with that term, but imagine running into the ocean, getting completely submerged head to toe, running back on the beach, and then putting sand all over every single spot of your body so you're completely covered by sand. That's a sugar cookie. It doesn't feel good.
I'm sure it doesn't. So, like, after this, how can I say, fun 50-hour weekend. Now, what would you say were, like, two of the biggest takeaways you had from it?
Yeah, I think the first thing that pops into my mind from that weekend is that you can't go through life alone. Mm. You know, not to be afraid to ask for help. And a lot of times your own pride can get in the way of that. I'll give you an example. There was one particular night. It was the very first night we had to ruck. Which, are you familiar with rucking?
Yeah, well, yeah, basically.
Backpacking.
A nice long walk with a heavy backpack.
Yeah, nice long walk with a heavy backpack. And we also had simulated rifles, which were basically PVC pipe filled with sand and capped on the end. So they weighed about 8 pounds each. Our backpacks weighed 40 pounds. We didn't know it at the time. I knew it afterwards because I asked. We went up a mountain and down a mountain. We did 26 miles the very first night. This is on top of all the other stuff we had done previously. And this is where pride comes in, because we were put in teams. The teams were based on height. Mm-hmm. And I'm 6'2", so I was one of the taller people there. They called us the Clydesdales, the short team. They called those the Smurfs. So just to give everybody an idea of, you know, how the teams are formed. It's usually formed by height. And the guy next to me was just – he was struggling big time with his pack. And, you know, it's middle of the night. We're all, like, hallucinating, things like that. And I offered to carry his backpack for him so that he wouldn't have to walk with weight, right? Because it's about the team, which is probably the second thing I was going to mention. It's not about you. It's about the team. He didn't want to do it. So a couple hours go by, and he's really starting to drag ass. And I said, hey, man, let me take some of that weight off you. Wouldn't do it. Finally, sometime in the middle of the night, he's like, yeah, I should give this to you. So I carry his backpack. So now I've got 80 pounds of backpack on me. I got my weapon and his weapon. All he has to do is walk. And he does. We make it to the morning. We see the sun come up. And we're down at the bottom of the mountain, and then he decides to quit right at that point. And I'm thinking, dude, I just carried all your shit for you. You know, I'm thinking about me. Mm. And he just goes and decides to quit. I mean, the sun had come up. I mean, we were getting ready to start a new day. And to me, what came up there was just pride. Had he allowed me to carry his stuff, or another teammate, because, you know, it's all about the team. If he would have taken that help initially and didn't wait hours and hours, he could still be in the game. He could have made it. So don't be afraid to ask for help. People like to help people, generally speaking. I do believe that. Are there some, you know, whatever, bad people in the world? Sure. But I think overall with humanity, I think people like to help people. And just don't be afraid to ask for help when you need it.
Mm. Yeah. I think those are wise words, because, like, this is the thing. We do live in a society which can be very prideful. And, like, the whole thing is, especially, there's a stigma when, guys, you've got to, you know what I mean? There's times where you've got to man up in life and, like, face that adversity, because there is no one left to hold the line. You have to hold that line. But it's not always that way. There is a many a times where you are at the line, but if you look to your left and you look to your right and you take a step, put your hand behind you, there are people around you which can help you. And it's a case of, if you say, I need help holding this line, you'll be amazed at the people who step up. But because of something like, because of that prideful, like, side of some people, they're not going to do it. And while they're trying to hold that line by themselves, all manner of hell breaks out, even more so when they could have just asked for that help, had that burden lifted from them, and basically, instead of holding the line, marching forward, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, spot on.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's the first thing. I think you asked me for two. So and the
Absolutely.
second one I had said a little bit earlier is just the team, because I had been, as I looked at my life up until then, even though I had was married, happily married, and you know, two kids, I was still pretty selfish guy. Like really, you know, I was, you know, wanting to go out with the guys all the time. I still hadn't kind of broken away from that. I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it can be a bad thing if you're doing it all the time. Or I just wasn't, I feel like I could be a better dad. You know, I just wasn't doing as much with my kids as I probably could or should be doing. And what I really learned out there at that camp was the importance of a team and really leaning into your team in those deepest, darkest moments. And that you can accomplish, you know, damn near impossible things together on a team. So what I derive from that is what I try to live my life by now, and that is serving others. Like I'm big on service to others. And before I, like I said, I wasn't. It was all about me, and you know, I gotta go get mine. That type of mentality. And now, you know, it's not. I mean, it really is about helping people at the end of the day. I just really enjoy helping people. Yep.
Now, when you say you like, yeah, about the team, did you have a quick sort of audit of your life and look at the people who were around you? And like, did you find you had teammates with you, or you had more sort of associates with you?
Yeah, great question. So team gets thrown out pretty loosely, I feel, in today's world, especially in the workplace, 'cause that gets thrown around a lot in corporate America, team. But to me, a high functioning team is a team where you're going to put the good of the team before the good of yourself. That comes first. All right. So it's almost like mission team self. Like you come last, actually. You should come last. The mission should come first, the team, then you. So yeah, when I look at my life back then, was I on lots of teams? Yeah, you could say that, but as far as high functioning teams go, probably just one, and that'd be my immediate family. My family was my main team, and still is. I mean that hasn't changed, but I am on more elite teams now where you know, we're together. And we're like, you know, part of a tribe of like-minded individuals, let's say, coming together as a team to do a common mission. So that has evolved. It's a great question because I hadn't really looked at it in that lens, but you're right. I do associate myself with a lot more like true teams now. Absolutely.
Yeah, the reason why I asked that is because, like, okay, when like someone embarks on doing stuff like this type of journey, and like, yes, you have done the 4-4-48, which I have done on a couple of occasions myself.
All right.
Yeah,
That's awesome.
basically, you fall into like many of the immediate people around you as, what the hell do you think you're doing? You're
Right.
crazy. And if anyone does think, hey, that's pretty damn cool, they don't, they seldomly say it. And like, you know what I mean? You might get a silent nod or a salute or like a little comment here and there. Trying to like get like-minded people on a similar page, doesn't have to be the same page, can be a very difficult thing. How did you find that? Like finding those.
You know, I just find that the more authentic I can be, the more vulnerable I can be in sharing my story and what I'm trying to do with No School of Grit, which is my book and also my coaching program. The more I put myself out there, it's kind of like the if you build it, people will come sort of mentality. And I do believe in that. Just kind of putting yourself out there and then leading by example, you know, like. The 4x4x48, for one, great job doing that because that is not easy at all. Very, very tough crucible. And I have a membership group, and that was our little mission was to do that together. We got to do that together. Now we were virtual, So the people right now in my group, I don't have anybody that like lives next door to me or anything. They're all over the country. I live in the United States for those people listening. And but with the power of technology, we could check in with each other on Zoom, Slack, phone, whatever. And it was just amazing to see the people in my group just posting videos of themselves checking in. It was inspiring. And to me, like that's where the magic is when you can do stuff like that together. And we're using it as a it's just training. I mean, why do we do this stuff? Yeah, it's crazy to some people, but to me it's the right kind of crazy, and it's training. It's mental training, it's emotional training. You're just doing things that suck. And if you do things that suck every day, like life's gonna get a little bit easier. I'm just a believer of that. I'm not saying it's easy by any means, but you can handle a lot more if you're used to being in adverse situations versus a life that's too comfortable. There's a saying, comfort's a slow death, and I do believe that. We got to constantly be growing in some capacity.
Now, this is the thing. I'm a strong believer in like discomfort. You've got to seek out discomfort in in some form or way. Not to sort of punish yourself, but the whole thing is it's kind of the sort of spark of energy you need on a regular basis to help find yourself a little bit more. This is the thing. I would say most people get to know themselves between 30 and 40% in their lives. Watch out for anyone who goes, I know myself completely, because they have seen some dark stuff and they may have done some dark things in their time, or like they've stepped to the abyss and stepped back without blinking. But you need that discomfort. You need some form of adversity in your life in some way. And I think there is a small movement of people which have discovered this. Because I would say in the developed world, in the West, because some people like yourself have had, you know what I mean? Life has not been overly difficult. It has not really hit them hard. There are other people which life has done that, but they still know they need that sort of bit of adversity. Because I think when you have humans where they have pretty much a heavenly scenario, they start to go a little bit loopy. They can't handle it. They need something to fight against on a daily basis. I could be wrong, but you know.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the hero's journey and having that dragon to slay sort of thing. Absolutely. I resonate with that a lot. And I see that a lot in the States. I think oh God, don't even get me started with comfort and with just social media and just games. And it's at least, hey, I get it. I live in a nice neighborhood. There's a lot of people that drive around in their golf carts, or they have their electric whatever. And my kids are like, "Hey, Dad, yeah, I want one of those." I'm like, "Yeah, well, you also have two legs, so use those legs. They're made. We got them for a reason. We need to be moving. Unless there's actual medical condition why you can't. Like, we need to move. We humans were made to move."
Absolutely. Which you're doing right now. I have to say, yeah. Okay, for anyone who's listened to this podcast, if you hear a slight that's because, yeah, Brad here is on a walking treadmill while he does this. As anyone on YouTube seeing him like stuff, yeah, he's on a treadmill walking right now. I have to ask, how many steps do you do a day on that treadmill?
So I made a deal with myself, and anytime I'm on a call, whether it's for work or a podcast interview such as this, I take it on the treadmill. So I usually get an extra. I don't walk that fast either. I'm walking 1 mile an hour, which sounds incredibly slow, and it is until you get behind a desk and you got a keyboard and you're trying to type something or read something. So I probably average an extra, I don't know steps. I can tell you miles. I probably get an extra 3 miles a day. So Monday through Friday, that's 15 miles a week, just walking,
Okay.
walking and talking.
That should work out around about 30,000 steps on
roughly. Yeah. So it adds up, you know, and that's, I love talking about that stuff with people because a lot of people that come to me, they're stuck in some area of their life. And I'm just not a proponent of, you know, jumping off the deep end, burning the boats type thing, and just going all in on one thing. Like, just make little changes here and there. Like, yeah, I'm on a walking treadmill. It doesn't seem that crazy to some, but it's like, you get it, and I'm not walking fast. Like I said, I'm walking 1 mile an hour, but that adds up over time. After the course of the week, I mean, an extra 15 miles, it's going to take its toll. The toll it's taken on me is my wife says, you've lost too much weight. You need to fatten back up. That's the adverse effect this is on me.
You look too thick.
She's like, you don't have much of a face. You're like sunken in. That's all that walking you're doing downstairs.
It's like, come on, where's your jowls? Come on.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So I have to ask. Now, this is the thing. With like how you started your journey is one thing. Now, other people starting their journey with regards to like, yeah, getting a little bit more grit in their life. What would you sort of recommend people doing?
There's a lot of things you can do. I think the easiest thing you can do is just wake up a little bit earlier in the morning. Sounds pretty simple, but you know what? I wake up early in the morning. I usually wake up at 4:30 or 5, usually 5, right around now. I hate that though, because I love sleeping. I love my bed. I love my pillow. But I set that alarm early. Why do I send it early? Because I'm able to do my morning routine. I have a morning routine I do every morning. So that'd be like the next thing I would recommend to your listeners as far as like building grit goes. And this would go to the building grit from the inside out. So, you know, doing that deep internal work. And it, for me, it starts. That's the first battle of the day is when your alarm goes off. What do you hit? Do you hit snooze? Do you turn it off? Do you get up? That's it right there. That sets the tone. So wake up just a little bit earlier. And you don't have, like I said, you don't have to jump off the deep end. Don't, you know, wake up 2 hours earlier than you do now. Just try 10 minutes, then stretch it to 20, 30. And then the key, though, is with that time, with that extra time now in your day, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do? Don't pick this up and start looking at your work emails and playing defense and putting out fires. Spend that time on you. I don't care what it is. It could be stretching. It could be meditation. It could be journaling. It could be working on a passion project. It could be writing a book. It could be working on that idea that you just had in the back of your head. That's what you do. Work on you.
Yes. I would say also, if you are going to go down this path, you need to add that sort of realm of consistency with regards to that, because in the equation of life, you are the constant in that equation. And if anything goes right or wrong, you are still in the heart of that equation. So, you know,
I love it. Yeah. Consistency is huge. It's not good enough just to do this, you know, one day a week. The idea is to do it every day if you can. You know, maybe like, okay, for me on Sunday, that's my day. You know, God took Sunday off. So guess what? I'm taking Sunday off too. So I sleep in. I sleep in on Sundays. That's my deal. I don't set an alarm, but I set an alarm every other day.
I hear you. So like, this is the thing. Now, with regards to installing this into like yourself, into others. Now, there is, how can I say, like, you have two forces of nature which will resist you on a regular basis. They hold you in awe, but they don't care. Like, they don't care sometimes about your feelings or your emotions in any way. So how do you manage to install this into your kids?
Oh, love that. How do you build grit in your kids or instill this? I think for all the parents out there, your kids are watching you. All right. Ideally, you're their role model, and it's not a professional athlete, a rock star, whatever. I mean, they can have fan, you can certainly be a fan of whoever. I mean, that's perfectly normal. But your kid, you should be the role model for your kids. So, how do you instill it in them? Show them. Lead from the front. So, I've taught my kids how to box breathe. It's a breath practice I do in the morning. They see me doing it. I've asked them to join in. Yeah, they might not be as consistent as I am, but they see their dad doing it, and I'm exposing it to them. Let's take working out. I'm fortunate enough. I have a garage that's large enough. I turned half my garage into a gym. Basically, it's a CrossFit box, and they see me working out there every day. Guess what naturally has happened? They've asked me, "Hey, Dad, can I hop on those rings? Hey, Dad, can I hop on that pull-up bar?" Absolutely, let's do it. I'll let them write their own workouts, you know. So just expose them to different things. Man, one of the best parenting things I ever did that I cannot recommend this enough. It's a way that you can help build mental toughness in your kids, emotional resiliency, grit, you name it. Martial arts. Okay, I grew up with. I was 42, right? Like Karate Kid was huge when I was growing up in the 80s. But you know what? We couldn't afford to do that stuff, and I was involved in other sports. But that was one of the things I always look back on. I'm like, damn, wish I would have learned a martial art. Well, my son comes up to me 2 years ago, and he's like, "Hey, I wanna do Taekwondo." I'm like, "You do?" So I looked into it and signed him up. He went to a couple classes. Mind you, he's 5. This is February of 2020. February 2020. Well, if you remember, February 2020, it was like world's getting ready to shut down, right? Little did we know. So sign him up for Taekwondo. Classes end, but the instructor is having classes online through Zoom. So I'm like, "All right, Brody's my son's name." I said, "Brody, we signed you up. You should do these classes. You know what it's like trying to get a 5-year-old to do a class online for 30 minutes? It's just not gonna. It didn't work out very well." So you know what I started doing? I started doing it with him. I was learning the moves. I was learning the forms. And then before you know it, I was like, I kind of like this. So when the world opened back up and he went, I joined alongside with him. So we've been doing martial arts together now for 2.5 years. My daughter has since joined as well, and we should have our all of us should have our black belts here within about a year and a half, which is pretty cool. But for those listening out there, I cannot think as a parent, there's very few opportunities for you to actually do something alongside your kids, such as martial arts or some other sport. And it's so cool because it's not about the self-defense piece of it. Yeah, it's a byproduct, and that's super cool. But to me, it's about failing with each other. We fail every day in class. When you go to a promotion, I'm super nervous. I'm as nervous as my kids are, you know, because I want to do good in front of all these people and, you know, do my form and break boards and all that good stuff. So you're getting to go alongside, you're getting to work alongside your kids. I mean, to me, that's the best way to do it, and in my opinion, if you're able to. Now, it also depends the age of your kids. But man, to go back and know some of the stuff that we know as adults back then, that's what we need to do is teach them, you know, show them what you're doing, and then teach them maybe why you're doing it. Or just things you've learned.
Yeah, I think when you say yes, like set the example, it's one of those things where, okay, there are so many things out there which compete with people's attention these days. And let's just say, if you look at the realm of social media, most, like I would say 80 to 90%, some people might say more, is a load of trash. And it's won't really sort of lead people down the right path. If you look at the realm of fitness, you see a person who's like, yeah, they're jacked, but you go, wait a second, you may be jacked in the wrong way, and which could be kind of which they claim to be natural, but you know what I mean. it's not the right thing. Or it's a case of they might be setting an example which what don't like marry up with what you might see as your social or like moral North Star, if you get what I mean. And like being able to see you out there and go, hey, this is my path. You can follow it too. Like, yeah, if you want to come in, join me, great, no problem. And bit by bit, trick them.
You're right. Sometimes you got to trick them, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Or sometimes you got to motivate them. It could be a toy or you know, money or whatever. So, yeah.
Not too much money.
No.
Yeah. So, like, when you have a hard start morning, like I have seen video of you in the gym app, you've claimed at 4:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Respect to you on that. It's like, yeah. what do you do to sort of kick yourself into gear when you have a hard start morning?
A hard start. So meaning I just got to get going. I don't have much time.
Not basically, you know, okay. you wake up, everything is about that day. It's like, yeah, you're 15% more tired. Yeah.
You don't want to do anything. You wake up and you're just tired. Yeah. Okay. Great question. I'm tracking. Those are the best days. They're not initially, because you could be whatever the reason is, you're tired. You stayed up late last night, binge watching TV. You drank one too many beers. Maybe you just had a late night working. I don't know. But you wake up and you're just, shit, I don't have it. That's when you got to do it. I have this conversation internally with myself, and I'm like, this is when most people would quit. It is. This is when most people would say, I've done enough. Or, nah, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll double down. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll put it off. But there's a saying I believe it's the smoke jumper's creed. I learned this at the SEAL camp I went to, and it's, we do today what others won't, so we can do tomorrow what others can't. All right. We do today what others won't, so we can do tomorrow what others can't. I have these personal mantras in my head that I will recite to myself in those moments to give me just a little bit more motivation to get myself out of bed and go do the stuff that I don't want to do. Because I know, without fail, there are absolutely days I don't want to work out. There's days I don't want to get up. But you know what? When I do and I get that workout done, or I wake up early and I do that morning routine, afterwards, I'm like, I am so glad I did this. And I remember that feeling because I get it every single time. There's never been a moment where I do that workout or, I do that morning routine and I'm like, that was a waste. I wish I didn't do that. That feels terrible. Conversely, every time, because I'm not perfect, every time I've kind of defeated myself and just didn't do that workout, slept in, didn't do that thing, the whole day I'm beating myself up. Like, why didn't I wake up earlier? Why didn't I work out? Why did, you know, it never fails. So you just got to break those loops, man, because it's not going to change. You just got to do it. And that's it. That to me, that is grit. That is mental toughness, is doing those things that you don't want to do. But you get it done anyway. And you just find a way, whatever that way is. It's different for everybody.
Very true. Very true. So you, sir, like, I like you, sir.
Likewise.
Hey. Like, so with this, like, you've got the book. You're like, basically, you're pursuing your own form of, like, yeah, your school of grit, your own personal journey. So at this present time, where do you think you're going, like, your story, your journey is going to take you in the next, say, 2 or 3 years? Do you have a clear picture, or are you just feeling your way through?
I feel like I'm kind of feeling my way through at this point. I'm big on intuition. Mm-hmm. And following, that little voice in your head or wherever your heart says to move towards.
Yeah.
I love doing this. So I love being on podcasts and meeting awesome people such as yourself. As I said earlier, I love helping people, which is why I started the School of Grit membership and coaching. And then the book's gotten, tell you what, I never wrote the book to sell a lot of copies. I did write it, though, for two reasons. One, the main reason was I just wanted my wife and kids to know what I went through. That way, if something ever happened to me, they would know what their dad did on this weekend and that you can push yourself beyond crazy limits. And, you know, hopefully that could motivate them to do awesome things one day. That's really the main reason I wrote it. But the second thing was, if this book could like help someone, help them get them unstuck, then I've done my job. And I've had so many people reach out to me, random people, friends of friends, such as that. It just gets me going, man. And I just want to find ways to do more of it. I'm looking to get the word out to as many people as I can. And, you know, your podcast is big on, you know, life warriors. And that's what I feel like I'm doing too, is trying to create a warrior class of people together. You know, we're a team. At School of Grit, we train together. We're big on team, and I'm just having fun. So whether it's public speaking, you know, running a big membership site, I don't know what that final answer is going to be. So I'm going to say yes, yes, and yes right now to just about everything, as long as it fits the mission.
And a glorious mission it is. A glorious mission it is. So if there was anyone you could meet, like currently alive, which can, like, you know what I mean, you could like just pick their mind for a bit of wisdom with regards to like grit, how they've handled a like trying time or circumstance in their life, who would it be, you reckon?
Ooh. So I have a few people kind of running through my head, but you know, I would have to go with the one that sort of started it all for me, the lady whose TED Talk that I saw, Angela Duckworth. If she's listening, I'd love to sit down with her and really pick her brain and see why she wrote the book and just dig deeper into the world of grit from a psychologist's point of view. I think that would just be such an awesome conversation.
Mm. And like, this is my final question for this moment of our time. I wish it was longer, but you know, it's just the way it is. Now, with regards to when you started this to now, what would you say to yourself today, to the back when you started, to yourself then?
Don't compare yourself to other people that you see online or through other mediums, and just keep on the path, keep on the course. That's what I would tell myself, because it's very easy to, I find myself in that comparison mode sometimes, whether it's, you know, how many followers do you have, how many likes, and you know, all that good stuff. But it's not about that. That'll happen organically. It's what you said earlier. It's that C word you said earlier. It's consistently. Consistently reaching out, consistently having a, you know, good message, and it'll happen. I'm just a big believer in it. I believe in the mission, and people have told me what it's done so far, and I've seen it work firsthand. So hopefully we'll be doing this for a long, long time. It's going to be a good ride.
Indeed it shall. Indeed it shall. And like, yeah, when you say, yeah, don't measure yourself against anyone else, when you like do the measurement or comparison to other people's lives, you're never enough. You'll always Absolutely. Find yourself lacking. And with that lacking, there is going to be a sense of despair of not being enough, and it will ultimately break you down at the end of the day. And no one needs that in their life, you know?
100%. It'll eat away at you slowly. Just get rid of that.
Excellent. Brad, I've got to say thank you for coming on today. You, sir, have been a superstar.
Thank you, brother.
No worries. How can people find you out there? How can they find that School of Grit?
All right. So the easiest way to get a hold of me is just go to my website, schoolofgrit.org. Not .com, but .org. The reason it's not .com is somebody already owns the domain, and I didn't want to pay for it. So it's schoolofgrit.org. Yeah, you'll find all my contact information on there.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you, Brad, for coming on today. You have been a superstar. Outstanding, to say the least.
Likewise, brother. Appreciate you having me. It was a lot of fun.
Excellent. And I'd like to say thank you to you, my friends, my life warriors, for sticking with us up until this point, to the very end. Please stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic. Be all the positive bees you can be in this world and then some. Have a great day, guys. Yes. Peace. And we are...